All right, I had somebody send me a message with a what some will think is a crazy proposition, but what others might think makes a lot of sense. I'll get into that in just a moment. This leads into that, though. This is a perfect lead into it. So, Senator John Fetterman was on CBS Mornings today, and he was asked about the government shutdown and the eight Democrats who voted not like the other eight Democrats, where he was one of them, and he's the one that's consistently done it. Well, anyway, they chatted. He said this.
You've been voting with Republicans to reopen the government. Now some of your fellow Democrats have decided to join you, and we're on a path to reopening. What do you think changed the minds of your colleagues to make them see things the way you've been seeing them?
I think collectively within the caucus, they realized this has to end. And now the kinds of mass chaos now that we've been facing. And, you know, I've been one of the very few that have been voting consistently from the beginning that it's always wrong to shut our government down.
Mm-hmm. And he has. Right? And a little more from CBS this morning.
The key demand was about the Affordable Care Act. You know, some people call it Obamacare. What will happen with that now under this situation that you all are proposing? What happens to it?
What I'm hopeful is that we are going to create those kinds of extensions. But we have to negotiate with the Republicans because America decided to put us in the minority.
There we go. Fetterman, stern, strong, to the point. And for some, will be a traitor. That's the way that it works in a two-party system. And right on cue, I was checking my mentions today, right? And somebody who I absolutely respect his opinion, he had sent me a message on social media. And he's a very heavy Democrat, okay? And so he was surveying the scene, and he sent me this message. Nothing screams eliminate the party system entirely and vote for the best person like the shutdown did. These political shenanigans will continue until people are voted into office based on who they are and not what party they belong to. Let me read you that again real quick. Nothing screams eliminate the party system entirely and vote for the best person like the shutdown did. These political shenanigans will continue until people are voted into office based on who they are and not what party they belong to. Do you believe that? I do. And I think those are great words. So in looking at that, like I know last Tuesday, we could go today, when I went and voted, there's no partisan line. I look at the person and I say, okay, will this person be a good judge? Will that person be a good judge? Will this person be a good town commissioner? Why in the hell are we even denoting party for school board anyway? But what's this person all about? And my ballot was, there's a D here, there's an R here, there's an R here, there's a D, an R. It is what it is. It's about research. It's about figuring out who that person is. And it's about finding the best, most proficient, qualified candidate for that job. But unfortunately, we're now in a position, and we have been for a long time, and it's why we're in this rut, this shutdown, because far too many people can't get out of that. And here's the other thing. Fetterman and the other seven are seen as brave by some and traitors by others, for simply doing what they felt was the best thing for all Americans. They're not voted in by just some people, or they're not sworn to serve just some people, I should say. They're sworn to serve all of them. But then it is something that is seen as this big noble move that they decided to serve all of them. Or on the other hand, it's something that's traitorous that they decide that they're going to serve everybody. So getting back to that, and that's the crux of it, at 866-391-1020, I want to talk to you. Is this a tipping point for you? We're never going to eliminate the party system. But if you could blow it up and do it all over again, if you could start politics and take one thing out of it, this is a compelling argument to me. we wouldn't be in the situation that we were in, that we are in. We just wouldn't. If there was no party system, and you know, there are some countries where they have 10 parties, and it dilutes it some, and maybe that has essentially kind of like the same effect. But if you got rid of the party system, we wouldn't be here. There's no way. You know why? Because there wouldn't be an expectation of John Fetterman. The expectation of John Fetterman and everybody else would be do the best for everybody who potentially can vote for you. And that's the way that, it should be. You know, I wake up today and I go through the stuff and I spend my mornings reading and researching and doing that after I get the kids off to school. And the way that John Fetterman, in particular, and then these other seven now who jumped on, many of them are retiring and they're not up to be voted in again or not voted in again anyway, so they had kind of nothing to lose. But the way that John Fetterman has no gray area because of this vote, that people either see him as this conquering hero or people see him as this turncoat is insane to me. When anybody with a brain, I think, looks at it and goes, oh, okay. Like, he wanted to get people back to work. He wanted to make sure people got fed. He wanted to make and allow members of the military, who are our strongest, best, and most dedicated, to not have their wives wait in a breadline somewhere. So that's not heroic, nor is it turncoat stuff. It's just freaking logic, man. But because of that two-party system, we have to play on one team or the other. And it gets back to, again, if you play on one team, you got to hate the other. You play on this team, you hate that team. You play on that team, you hate this team. And that's just the way that it works. There's been no more compelling argument, maybe in history, than the last 40 days for blowing this whole thing up from a two-party system. We're not ever going to. But if you could just vote for people and people could do their job based on who they are, what they want to get done, as opposed to what party they belong to, it'd be a much better place. It just would be. Speaking of coyote hunting, this is crazy. So somebody was telling me, I'm not a hunter, but somebody was telling me once that coyotes in the whole ecosphere, they serve like no positive purpose. All they do is tear your stuff up. They eat other animals, nothing. And especially in places like where people are farmers, like they can really screw your livelihood up. And they serve absolutely no positive purpose. Now, maybe speaking out of turn, I'm not an outdoorsman kind of guy like that. I'll be in the middle of nowhere on hikes and whatever, but I don't shoot guns and stuff. So anyway, here's where the story is. Former Pirate shortstop Jordy Mercer was telling me this one time. He was explaining all this to me because he has this gigantic ranch in Oklahoma. So here's my coyote story. So he says to me, hey, over the holidays, I'm going coyote hunting at my ranch in Oklahoma. It's called Mercer Ranch. And I go, oh, okay. Like, what's that about? Coyote hunting. He said, well, we do two things. One, we get these night vision goggles, which it sounds like they're about to do in Churchill, right? And they post up and these coyotes come hopping along and they come towards our livestock because they'll ruin your livestock, like bad. And he said, and then we wipe them out. And I said, wow, that's how, and he was showing me these videos. And he's like, it's like a video game, but it's something you have to do. But he said, then we get all the boys together. And I'm like, okay, what do we got going on here? They rent a helicopter. Follow me on this. With like an open skid. And they strap a couple dudes. I'm not making this up. To these helicopters. And they just rent one. And they take turns like two at a time. And they'll fly real low. And they'll wipe out these coyotes from these helicopters. If I hadn't seen the video, I would have thought it was the most crazy hunting story in history. Here we are. We got this major league shortstop strapped onto the side of a helicopter that's flying. It's not just sitting on the ground. And it's only a couple hundred feet off the ground, if that. And he's shooting his gun at these coyotes and wiping them out. And I thought, holy heck. Talk about like an invasive species. These coyotes must do a ton of damage. And then I hear that story today about the coyotes in Churchill on that former Westinghouse land. They generally don't want anything to do with you. They don't. They want less to do with you than you want to do with them. But I'll say this. I hear coyotes behind my house at night. Way back behind my house, there's train tracks. Like way back there. Not too far, but so you can hear the train whistle. And it comes every night at about 9 to 9:30. And so you know how a train whistle goes. About once a week, when that train whistle comes through. I sound like a Woody Guthrie or something. Or Pete Seeger. Whenever that train whistle comes through, right then, just after it does its whistle, the coyotes howl and try to like match that same noise. That spooks me out. Gives me the creeps just a little bit. Anyway, there's my coyote story. Good luck to all those Churchillians who get the license to go out and hunt these coyotes whenever they're cleared to do so. Yikes. Anyway, I'm here to tell you to leave some people alone. I'll get into that coming up next. And before we're out of here, Veterans Day, we've been playing a bunch of audio. President Reagan, 1988. You're going to want to hear this speech because it's fantastic. All right, a couple things. We'll hear from President Reagan before we get out of here today. I've been playing at the end of each hour a Veterans Day speech or a snippet from Veterans Day. We'll hear President Reagan, 1988, Arlington National Cemetery. He gave stirring speeches. He just did. So there's that. How about this? That story about the coyotes, the old Westinghouse place. I'm going to connect some dots. I might be right. I might be wrong. You may be crazy. Who knows? Maybe if some old curmudgeon-y yinzers that stopped Westinghouse from getting sold to Amazon and put a warehouse there, maybe if they didn't step in and do all that, there wouldn't be coyotes running around there. They would have ran off somewhere else. Who knows? Maybe they'd be in Edgewood. Maybe they'd be in Swissvale. Maybe they'd be up in the hills where they should be living instead of that Westinghouse plan. And that would be just booming right now with Amazon. Buzzing like bees around a hive. Somebody once said that. And that's the way that it would work. But you had to stop it. Anyhow, 866-391-1020. That's 866-391-1020. That is a massive piece of land when you drive by right there and look at it. It is. Anyway, all right, let's hit this real quick. So I was driving down the street today, and I get up super early in the morning. I don't need to rehash. I've told you this a gazillion times. Get up at 4, and I leave about 4:30 for a little while, go work out, then come home. So it's still dark, no matter what time of year it is. Doesn't matter if it's summer, winter, whatever, it's dark. So I'm also somebody, I'm weird like this. If somebody has like one planter or one light that is different, I notice, because it's the same all the time, and I'm the only one out. There are more. I see more. I only drive a mile and a half to where I need to go in the morning, but I see more deer than cars. 100% of the time, I see more deer than cars. But anyway, everything is like routine. I can draw a template how it's going to go. So today, I'm driving down the street, and I did a double take. Something looked way different. That light is different. What's going on over there? That house, the one on the left, about halfway down the hill. Christmas tree in the front window. Big, bright, beautiful Christmas tree in their big front window. And I said, wow, everything's content. I got to think about this. Now, I had heard conversations not too long ago from some people, my kids fighting about this, and other people who make a meal of all of this. If you put your Christmas tree up before Thanksgiving, what kind of idiot are you? If you decorate with Christmas before Thanksgiving, what kind of idiot are you? Then the other side is, oh, I find whatever day that I can that it's free to put up. How about this? I have come down firmly right here. what the heck is it to you how somebody else decorates? If they want to have their Christmas tree up all year, if they want to put their Christmas tree up. Now, some old timers tell me people would put the Christmas tree up and it would just be there on Christmas morning. That they'd never see it before. That's hard to believe, but if they say that happened, that happened. Like, it would never be up. And, like, Santa would bring the Christmas tree, too. I've never understood this whole, here's the threshold of the date that it's acceptable to put your Christmas tree or your Christmas tree decoration, or your, excuse me, your Christmas decorations up. And then and only then will I accept you socially for such things. If not, you're a weirdo. It's got to be after Thanksgiving. It's got to be after December 1st. It's got to be after Halloween. It's got to be this or that. I mean, there are people who have such a strong opinion about that who I've talked to. And I just sit there and I kind of listen, but I definitely roll my eyes about it. And I think, like, this is one of those things that's a study in mind your own business. What is it to you when somebody else puts their Christmas tree up? Or when somebody else puts Christmas decorations up? The same mentality plays out. You know when the same mentality plays out? Two other things that I can think of off the top of my head. One, whenever Starbucks, which I don't go to because I don't like it. Number one, it just doesn't taste good. And also, apparently, are they on strike yet? I don't know. It looks like a free Palestine rally, all the people who work there anyway. Anyhow, so Starbucks comes out with their pumpkin spice latte once a year. And then that gets in the whole argument of, it's too early. What are we doing the pumpkin stuff for? Hey, man, somebody likes it in May. It is what it is. Same thing with the McDonald's Shamrock Shake. Now, they're seasonal for a reason because they want people to look forward to it. But that argument, that's one of the things. The other is this. When the department stores or places like Target or Walmart or whatever, they start putting the Christmas stuff up. Social media then becomes inundated with, too early. Why are you playing Christmas music? Why are there nutcrackers up along the aisle? What's it to you? Don't buy it if you don't want it. This has become one of those things fueled by social media that has become an argument that is so gigantic that has a third choice, which is shrugging your shoulders and keeping it moving, that enough people don't choose, I think. But yeah, our inability to keep our opinion to ourselves fuels things like this. And when I saw that Christmas tree this morning driving down my street, I thought, you know what? Good for those people. They do what they want to do. They want it up. They want it up. It will fuel more than one debate on my street between people that maybe a husband and a wife or whatever, like, hey, did you see that house down there? Isn't it a little bit early to have your Christmas tree up? And somebody would be like, yeah, I can't believe they would do that. That's ridiculous. It's not even Thanksgiving yet. Who the hell would put the Christmas tree up? I'm telling you, it will do that because that's how nosy we are. Nebby, I should say, in this day and age. It's crazy. It just is. Coming up next, Veterans Day. We've been playing little vignettes, speeches, different things from a bunch of different influential people. All right, here we go. Lots going on. Veterans Day, as Paul just alluded to. We've been playing a bunch of different sound, a bunch of different things. We played President Bush earlier today, George W. Played a President Reagan clip from 1985. Played Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who had some things to say. And then we took your calls and talked about Veterans Day, the proper way to address veterans, the way that you're supposed to celebrate today, or maybe hold it as a time of great reflection, and maybe just a little bit of both. Who knows? It's always delicate, I think, is the best way to put it when you deal with a day like today. It can be somber. It could also be something where you talk to a veteran and find out more about them. Anyway, very few have eloquently been able to put in right context so many different times, like President Reagan was. So in 1988, he went to Arlington, as he did pretty much every Veterans Day, and had a presentation there. In 1988, it went like this.
Those who live today remember those who do not. And those who know freedom remember today those who gave up life for freedom. Today, in honor of the dead, we conduct ceremonies. We lay wreaths, we speak words of tribute, and in our memories, in our hearts, we hold them close to us still. Yet we also know, even as their families knew when they last looked upon them, that they can never be fully ours again, that they belong now to God and to that for which they so selflessly made a final and eternal act of devotion. We could not forget them. Even if they were not our own, we could not forget them. For all time, they are what we can only aspire to be, giving, unselfish, the epitome of human love, to lay down one's life so that others might live. We think on their lives, we think on their final moments. In our mind's eye, we see young Americans in a European forest, or on an Asian island, or at sea, or in aerial combat. And as life expired, we know that those who could had last thoughts of us and of their love for us. As they thought of us then, so too we think of them now. With love, with devotion, and with faith, the certainty that what they died for was worthy of their sacrifice. Faith, too, in God and in the nation that has pledged itself to his work and to the dream of human freedom. And a nation, too, that today and always pledges itself to their eternal memory. Thank you. God bless you.
Ronald Reagan. Again, I said it when I played the last one from a few years before that, that Ronald Reagan was such a great speaker because he didn't necessarily use words you had to look up in a dictionary. He didn't. He didn't come across as someone who tried to be smarter than his audience. And he used succinct sentences. He got straight to the point, and he spoke matter-of-factly. That, to me, makes a great speaker. Sometimes you'll go and you'll listen to a speech, and someone will use these gigantic flowery words, and it's evident that when they wrote it, they wrote the speech and then grabbed a thesaurus and tried to use that as many times as they could when they could have just been simple and direct with it. Reagan was the polar opposite of that. He spoke to everybody. He didn't dumb it down, however, because his words had a lot of meaning and they were very strong and they were forceful. It was just perfect. There's no way that you can't list him in our lifetime as one of the greatest givers of a speech. He is up there on the Mount Rushmore. He's just absolutely positively incredible. And he rose to great moments and gave his best speeches in the biggest times. He just did.